Welcome to Skip LaCour's Bodybuilding and Fitness Podcast. Six-time national champion bodybuilder, one-on-one peak performance coaching specialist, Mass Machine Nutrition Supplement Company owner, and speaker, Skip LaCour offers his expert advice on training, nutrition, and motivation that will help you take your efforts to the next level. He also interviews the most interesting and passionate people in the bodybuilding and fitness world so you can learn from their knowledge and success too.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this Bodybuilding and Fitness Podcast. I am Skip LaCour, and in this special series of Bodybuilding and Fitness Podcast, I am bringing to you the most passionate and interesting people in bodybuilding fitness. Now, this is a special series of podcasts within the special series of podcasts because I am bringing to you the true legends of bodybuilding, all leading up to Santa Clara, California, where we're going to have a weekend with the Legends Seminar. And who will be there? Mr. Olympia, many times or eight times, Lee Haney, Sean Ray, Rich Gaspari, Chris Cormier. There will be Mike Christian and my special guest today, Mr. Flex Wheeler. How are you doing today, Flex?
Great, Skip. Great, bro. Thanks for having me on a podcast.
Oh, I love talking to you, and the fans love your stories. There's something about you. You're so genuine and transparent that really connects with the fans. So I got to make sure I ask more questions like that.
Sure.
We've had the privilege to do some interviews over the years, and that's what they really like about you the most. But let me tell you something. You are a true legend. I mean, you are a product of the 90s, what many people say were the most competitive years in bodybuilding, right? Some of the true greats. And tell me, what is your fondest memory of competing? You have so many victories. I know what my favorite Flex Wheeler memories are, but what's yours? That would be very interesting to know that.
You know, probably some of my fondest moments was just, and you know what, it's interesting because I didn't realize it, and I don't think any of us during that era realized what was really going on, but probably just training at Go's Gym, just the energy and the camaraderie that me, Chris Cormier, and Rico McClinton had, and Charles Glass of training, just, I mean, you know, it was some of the most painful and dreadfulest times as far as training. But, you know, now that I look back at it, man, it's what I live for. That's all I did. You know, it's like a party of pain and hard work. But, man, you never miss that party.
Right. When you really push yourself those years, man, you just look back with such fond memories. You know, since the Arnold days and all that camaraderie, something that, you know, a lot of people, they long for the old days, and they said, oh, there isn't the camaraderie like there was back when Arnold's days, Arnold and Frank and all that. I'll tell you something is that your era in the 90s, I mean, that's right up there with that. Now that we have some distance and we can have that perspective, you guys were great. The world followed you. You were in the magazines. A lot of you were throughout your amateur career into your pro career. We got to follow you all the way. It was quite a time.
Yeah, I would never take anything away from those guys, because if it wasn't for them laying down the tracks, there would be no us in the 90s. But I would somewhat beg the difference. Like you said, now that we had some time and distance to be aware of what took place in the 90s, probably because of things like American Sport Network.
Yes.
And with Lou Zwick had as far as TV,
right?
The magazine, and then the difference of us being able to travel to so many events globally, I would probably argue that we didn't have a better rivalry and camaraderie ship back in our time, because we had TV, unlike they did back then. And then we all traveled the world with competitions and the FIBO and the many other shows that don't exist now. That existed back then, and we always planned our flights together and stayed in the same hotel together, and we traveled the world doing seminars. So I think I would probably have to beg to differ, but probably like all old timers, including myself, we probably all feel that our time was the elite time of the sport, right?
Right, right. Well, my favorite Flex Wheeler memory, and you brought it up, was you were the first Arnold Classic. I mean, when it was really got some momentum and it was on TV. Do you remember that? Was that?
Yeah. And that was one of the greatest things. I mean, I even remember the Discovery Channel actually followed me one year for the Arnold Classic and some other guys also. But it was more memorable for me because I actually won that year. So to have, you know, something so powerful as like the Discovery Channel interviewing you. And I think the title was The Greatest. And before they aired our part, they showed people like Muhammad Ali and Bruce Lee, some truly greats. And I don't put myself or any of us in that category. But just to be watching a show and them featuring, you know, people like that before they actually talked about us and put our show on was just, you can't pay for that. You know, you can't pay for that type of exposure. And the respect that they gave us, and even more so, I think, where they propelled the sport with giving us that broad audience globally.
And there couldn't have been a better representative to bodybuilding when we had that chance on television with you. Your physique, I mean, one of the most beautiful physiques in the world, and your posing and the splits. I mean, you couldn't have picked a better person to really personify and show the world bodybuilding back there. I mean, you got to go down as a, you know, I know you were never crowned Mr. Olympia. You have your Arnold Classic championships. You have your Ironman championships. But it was just that era that you were in. But you got to have, you know, I know you looked at yourself humbly about, you know, how your greatness is. I think all your fans all around the world for all these years may beg to differ with you, right? But just the one of the most beautiful, beautiful physiques that ever stepped on a bodybuilding stage.
You know, now I'm so far removed from the sport as far as competitiveness. I'm so far removed from looking like that. So I look at it now with different eyes. You know, obviously I was a stickler about myself and I never thought I was good enough. And I actually hated, no matter what I projected to the public, I hated what I look like. I would never walk around in my own home without a shirt on. You know, I wouldn't walk around, you know, just shirtless. And I never went to the beach or anything where I would have to reveal what I look like. And even photographers can back me up by saying, you know, I hated photo shoots. I would do everything I could to get out of any photo shoot, regardless whether I was 100% or not. And even other, you know, bodybuilders can back my play by saying, yeah, Flex hated photo shoots. Well, it wasn't because I hated the business. I hated the way I looked. I didn't recognize what I looked like. But yeah, now that we have, again, that we're so far removed from the sport and I can look at my physique without, you know, competitive eyes, but, you know, more so just as an art. And I can look at everyone else from before me and who are competing now. I do admire what I brought to the table. And I humbly admit that, wow, I was different.
Yes. Yes. Different. I did a podcast with Chris Cormier, and he talked about how you were such an influence when he first started. In the very first show, you were there, and he said, just this very small frame guy with all this muscle piled on him, and he just talked about, you know, the good old days that you had, that camaraderie. That's exactly what you talked about. That's what, you know, Chris was bringing me back at the time, making me feel all that nostalgia. He was so connected to it. Tell me, what is your favorite experience? If you can pick out one funny story, one experience, one song of the 90s, I mean, bring me back there too.
You know, again, it would be hard to pick because just, and Chris was such a part of making me who I was as Rico, you know, all three of us, I don't think I would beg to differ that there's ever been such a tight-knit trio that competed. I mean, we're hellishly competitive with each other in every way. I don't care whether it's talking about being good-looking or being sexy or training hard or the best-dressed or trying to get the ladies. We're all competitive with each other. We worked at the same nightclub for a while until I got fired, which was Roxbury. Uh-huh. So we spent the majority of our time around each other. And, you know, they played video games and we'd hang out. And most of our lunch, breakfast, or dinners were all together. So that's just that snowball of the times that we shared together and now realizing, you know, what a jewel it really was. And it's true, but it's unfortunate. You don't really recognize something that's different until, you know, that time is gone. And, you know, a lot of times we don't pay respects to a great person until after they're gone. And right, only then right. do we spark nostalgia. I'm like, wow, look what they did. Look at it. You know, look at the trail that they blazed. But that's us as human beings. So I recognize that now, and because it's kind of, you know, it is kind of gone. It is kind of dead what we did back then. But I it was just amazing just how we all made each other better, you know, especially Rico, where, you know, he didn't achieve what we did as far as competing wise, but he was damn well the leader. I said that so many times.
Oh, really? Wow.
That I was... Go ahead.
No, that is, I was impressed that he was a leader like that. You wouldn't know that from the magazines. That's quite a distinction to be such around such accomplished bodybuilders. You anoint him as the leader of your group.
No, he was truly the leader. You know, he didn't achieve what we did as far as competing or magazine play, but Rico was a leader. He was the most level-headed. Uh-huh. He was the most responsible.
Yeah.
He was the most professional out of all of us. It's just, I don't think I probably could have achieved what I did without having Rico by my side and, wow. and nurturing me. I always told him, you know, I remember we were sitting in Firehouse one day, and we were sitting there chatting, and I go, you know, it's funny, Rico, because most people think that I'm the leader of this, but they have no idea that you're the leader. And he goes, what makes you say that? I go, because you are, man. You are the leader of this whole group. You know, I mean, me and Chris were very immature and competitive, and we would have knuckled up with each other many a times. And Rico was always just the most level-headed. He'd just look at us and say, you guys are both stupid, cut it out.
You know,
he'll just walk away, and we would kind of follow suit. So,
well, that's quite a compliment. What is Rico doing now these days?
Oh, my gosh, man. He's a director now. He starred in so many major movies.
Oh, wow. Good for him.
Yeah. So many major movies that he's been involved in. He's also a real estate agent. He has a multitude of different homes all over the place. He's still training people there at Go's Gym Venice.
Awesome. Good for him. Yeah. I might have to get him on a podcast to complete this.
He would be amazing.
Yeah.
He would be amazing to listen to Rico.
Yeah. Well, tell me, I'm going to go back, because I think your childhood, I think what people I've noticed really connect with you is that, you know, they've looked up to you as this superstar, this amazing superhero, and then there's so much of them in you. They can relate to you and the challenges of self-esteem. But before I go back there, tell us what you're doing these days, all right? And I know you're heavily involved with bodybuilding. You're traveling around the world.
Yeah, I've been very fortunate. I'm one of the owners and partners of a couple of different companies. The first company is our nutrition company. And it's MEX, M-E-X, and it stands for Muscle Excellence. We're based out of Poland. We're in pretty much every country globally. And actually, we're looking to bring United States sometime at the end of this year. Actually, my other business partner and another business adventure, Stan Efferding, we own The Cooler.
Okay.
The Cooler that starts with a K. And it's a new invention that we just brought to market. Europa is our main distributor internationally and here in the United States. And me and Stan have also teamed up where we're going to be the owners and present MEX here to United States. So kind of a jack of all trades and a master of many.
Yeah, you're still loving the connection with the fans, getting out there, traveling around the world. Are you just as passionate now these days as you were back in your competitive days?
I would say most so, because, I mean, honestly, I don't have the different sports technology drugs raging through me. So I have more of a calm mind frame, and I'm actually so detached from being competitive with everything that I do that I get to enjoy it more. Sometimes I travel over 150,000 miles a year, which is twice the amount of traveling that I used to do when I competed. And I just enjoy it more. You know, I enjoy meeting the fans, and, you know, it catches me off guard that, you know, when I meet someone and they tell me that they name their child after me, or their dog, or, you know, they have my picture on their refrigerator and it saved their life. I take a step back and I wonder to myself, do they really realize, you know, the derelict that I am, you know, but yeah, I just enjoy it so much more.
And that's got to feel great. I mean, you had your head down. You were competitive. I mean, you did what it takes to win. And you did a lot of shows, too, and you were successful in those shows. And, you know, the fighter spirit in you, it was never good enough, right? And now, like you said, you distance yourself. You get to look in these people's eyes and really feel their soul and how much appreciation they had for what you accomplished. That's got to feel great.
Definitely. It really does. It really does. And just to be able to connect with them on so many different levels. Also, I'm actually a spokesperson for a company called Wellness Fitness Nutrition. They specialize in hormone replacement. And obviously, I've always been really one to be very forthcoming in my issues that I had with my in hormone balance, and, my kidney transplant and all that stuff. So, you know, it's just a number of different ways that I can see get back for all the people who stood by me and watched me throughout my career.
Right. And how is your health? I'm sure we are concerned about that.
Blessed by God, truly. There's so many reasons why I shouldn't be here, because of different health problems. But I'm doing great.
Good.
No need to knock on wood because wood had nothing to do with it. Yeah, I'm doing great. And I'll be 50 in a couple of months here. And actually, I'm teaming up with some guys and companies that I'll make announcement with later on that I'm going to try to get in the best shape that I possibly can in the next 2.5 months to see what I can look like at the age of 50. And we're going to reveal what I look like. And if people want to watch that, they can tune into my YouTube channel, Official Flex Wheeler, or follow me on my Instagram, which is Official Flex Wheeler also.
Okay, and then you're also on Twitter, Flex_Wheeler, right?
Yep, correct. Okay. Yeah, I have to. It's just sad because I actually trademarked Flex Wheeler. I own it, in and out, and I have so many imposters using my name.
Right.
I keep being told that I need to go ahead and follow suit and kick them all off, but I haven't yet. But so I have to be creative in coming up with these underscores and official this and official that. And it's so bad that actually when someone is talking to me on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, they ask me, is this really the real Flex Wheeler?
Right,
I'm like, how do I answer that? How do I answer that it's really me? And then how do I move forward and prove to you that it is me? 9 times out of 10, I just laugh and don't respond because you imagine trying to prove to someone that you are who you are. So,
right.
Really?
Right. Well, how accessible are you to your fans through social media? Are you really active there, or is the best to come to Santa Clara at the end of the June and actually meet you there or at one of your events around the world? Do you do a lot of interaction?
No, I do travel a lot. I go to all the major shows, and at the show that's coming up in Santa Clara, actually me and Stan will be there. We'll have a booth that we'll be selling the cooler there.
Okay.
And it's actually me that you'll be talking to, be it Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or on my official Flex Wheeler YouTube channel. I'm actually the one who is talking to everyone. That's why it kind of takes so long for me to get back or respond to people, and they might get upset, but it's me. I don't have any big company running behind me because at the end of the day, it depersonalizes that whole situation. I mean, the reason why they're contacting me through one of those mediums is because they want to contact and they want to make contact with me or asking
right.
a personal question. So it kind of diffuses the situation if I have someone in a media net.
Yeah. Well, getting back to your age, man, I tell you, you got the Gen X, you got a very, very young looking face.
Yeah.
You know, so get that, you're going to get that body in shape, and we're going to be able to document their entire journey. Is that how that's going to work?
Exactly. We're
awesome.
Going to do that through my YouTube channel and also my Instagram. And that's what I plan on doing. And, I mean, it's interesting that everybody thinks I always look great based on what I look like in my clothes, but I'm never happy what I look like. And I don't think I look like what they think I do. So over the next couple of days, as soon as I get enough balls, I'm going to go ahead and start taking photos and videos of what I look like with my shirt off. We're going to be documenting videos of me actually training in various different places in the United States. And I'm going to be teaming up with CT Flexor and Mike Rashid and Stan Efferding shooting videos and stuff like that. So it's going to be a number of different training systems I'm going to use. But my overall goal in doing this is to prove to people that there's really no excuse. I mean, I'm I'm a father, I'm a grandfather, I'm a business owner, entrepreneur. I travel the world over 150,000 miles a year, but there's no excuse. And on top of that, I have a rare kidney disease. I'm a kidney transplant patient, and I still have the disease. It doesn't disappear. And like a lot of people think, once I got my kidney transplant, that the disease is gone. No, I still have the disease, and many people have lost their lives on their third or fourth kidney to this. So my goal is just to prove that there's no excuse. I don't try to plan on looking like a competitor or anything like that. And I just wanted to show people that it's a lifestyle. You know, it's not some, you know, 20-week program that you can do and then just crash off. But I'm going to be honest. And unfortunately, you know, my strength and my weaknesses is sometimes I'm too transparent, you know, but it is me and it's who I am. So I'm going to be honest, you know, throughout my video, because there's sometimes I just don't feel like it. You know, I fall off my wagon and I got to dust myself up and pick myself back up and get back at it. But that's the day-to-day struggle of what it takes and what's necessary. So that's my goal. So I hope people tune in on the various different mediums and, yeah, and follow through.
I don't know. I they've seen you be this invincible champion.
Yeah,
I think that the people will welcome, I think, this. And I've always said this, and I want to take – after I take a quick break, I want to come back and talk about your story that I think a lot of people – they appreciate that transparency. I just want to tell you that, you know, one thing that I really admire about you is your stance on social media, staying up to date. You're going to be on YouTube. You're going to team up with C.T. Fletcher. I see so many of these old school bodybuilders. I'm not quite sure if you're in the old school category yet, especially because you stay
50. I think 50 qualifies to be old school.
But you're staying current. You're staying relevant. You're using the new social media to empower you and not, you know, discourage it. Like, that's how it's not in the old days. And I think
right.
That's a great quality to have. I mean, you've been doing this since you were a teenager and you continue to stay relevant now. And that's just an amazing quality to have. So we're going to take a quick break and then we're going to talk about young Ken Wheeler and how he turned into the great Flex Wheeler. Okay, so we'll do that and we'll be right back.
No problem.
You're listening to Skip LaCour's Bodybuilding and Fitness Podcast.
This is IFBB Hall of Fame professional bodybuilder Sean Ray. Join me and some of the other legends of the sport of bodybuilding, like 8-time Mr. Olympia, Lee Haney, Hall of Famer Rich Kaspari and Flex Wheeler, along with Chris Cormier, Mike Christian, and Skip LaCour at the Legends Seminar Saturday and Sunday, June 27th and 28th in Santa Clara, California at the San Jose Championships. Get up close and personal with these amazing champions and find out what made them great during their competitive days and what's driving them now as we continue to find out what they eat and what are they doing today. For more information about this Sean Ray production, make sure you go to legendseminar.com.
So, you have your bodybuilding and training efforts going in the right direction. That's awesome. Are you now ready to take your entire life to the next level too? Sure, it takes a lot of focus and discipline to build a great body, but that's not going to automatically translate into an incredible overall life too, unless you have a clear-cut vision for exactly what you want for your life and an effective plan that you really believe in to make it happen. Maybe you've already realized this. Your body has improved dramatically. People compliment you all the time, but you still feel that there's something missing. What's your plan to become more than just a great body and create an amazing, balanced, overall quality of life that you can be proud of and confidently work toward? One-on-one peak performance coaching specialist Skip LaCour will help you channel all that your hard work, discipline, and abilities to become more than just muscles and help you build a life filled with confidence, passion, and purpose. You can have it all. Confidence in every social situation, wealth, opportunity, freedom, love, and connection, along with your impressive physical body and amazing health. When you know the strategies to put it all together and execute them on a continual basis, go to skiplacourcoaching.com and see the different one-on-one life coaching plans Skip LaCour has to help you. Set up a free coaching session to see if this exclusive next-level one-on-one coaching program is right for you by sending Skip an email at skip@skiplacourcoaching.com.
We are back with our special guest, Ken Flex Wheeler. So, Flex, we were talking about that transparency. You have quite a story that you grew up in rather humble beginnings, you know, finding who you were. Tell us about that journey.
Yeah. You know, I was born in Fresno, California. 1965 is when I was born. So, you know, my early teenage years was different. You know, that's kind of when the Crips and the Bloods were all forming, and actually it just caused division with families and friends and everything. So it was a rough environment to be around. you know, I was on welfare. Like most people in my area, we were all on welfare. So I didn't have a lot of money. Didn't have a lot of money at all. You know, I was, you know, sexually abused throughout my childhood. And, you know, it was a rough life in school, because even though I was pretty much a martial arts expert at a young age, I couldn't bring myself to fight someone on the street. So I kind of started getting, you know, kind of smart about it. So I would normally try to, you know, invite the bully to one of my karate classes, and then I would destroy him. Because I had no problem in fighting, you know, in that environment. So then the bully would normally go out afterwards and say, "Hey, man, don't mess with him. He knows karate." So that would kind of keep me out of fights. And then, you know, as I got older, unfortunately, the pendulum swung, and I really didn't have a problem fighting on the street. And, you know, as I said in my book, you know, good and bad thing is my victims grew in numbers, because the old Kenny Wheeler, who always got beat up on and mistreated his whole younger years, you know, was quick to put a person in their place if necessary. So, you know, but as I grew older and began to fight on a bigger scale as far as throughout the United States, I began to understand and respect the art more. And I was also more aware that I wasn't the baddest, you know, MF on the planet, because I've seen other guys in tournaments who were just light years ahead of me. So it actually gave me a different perspective on fighting people and getting angry when someone, you know, stepped on my shoe or said something wrong to me. So it wasn't my trigger points anymore. Actually, there was only a few key things that would actually trigger me to fight a person with just having no fear and hurting them. And that's one, if they used the N-word and called me that just is, I would have no disregard for them. Or if they hurt a friend of mine or a family member, I would just see red immediately. Like I said, I started having a different type of respect for people. And unless they did one of those two things, I would always try to give them an scapegoat, because, you know, I understood that what if I met someone, you know, greater than myself and protecting themselves or fighting, you know, that would probably be a very dangerous person to be able to play with me or hurt me at will. Right. So,
and what age was that when you came to that realization?
Probably about 2021 is when I came to that epiphany. And actually, I was a bouncer at a nightclub, and I just had got in fight with a group of guys, me and my martial artist and mentor Tyrell McGuire. We had just got into a big fight with a gang there in Fresno, and it was kind of play for us, because, you know, just like if you take any MMA fighter now, if they were to get in a street fight, it would be a game for them, because they're so seasoned what they do. So we kind of had fun, but, you know, a few people got hurt, and it just came an epiphany to me, you know, what happens when I run up against that person.
Right. And how many years was that into your bodybuilding career? And,
I'd already started competing.
Okay.
I'd already started competing. I started competing when I was 13 years
right,
old.
Right.
It was my first time I ever competed. So I was doing both throughout my martial arts and bodybuilding throughout that time. But anyway, so it just dawned on me that I'm probably going to eventually run up to someone who's greater than me. And so I started giving everybody that type of respect and giving them an scapegoat, unless they really just wanted to make it happen. Because I would then hope, through me being nicer to other guys, that when I ran up to that guy who could just demolish me, that they would respectfully give me an scapegoat so I could walk away with my dignity intact.
Right.
And thank God I never ran into that person, or if I did, I didn't know it, because we never came to fisticuffs. So.
Well, you talked about your challenging upbringing, your childhood. You probably see this as you travel around the world and you really are into this bodybuilding culture, our brothers and sisters in iron. Seems like a lot of us are running from things in our childhood, and we find the iron and that dedication. Tell me about that. Did you go to martial arts first? Did you get that therapy with working out? I mean, how did bodybuilding, especially right at the beginning when you got to it, how was that your therapy, or was it?
No, you know what? I guess, in hindsight, yeah, but it's not like I migrated to it because I couldn't fight or I was being beat up on all the time. I started martial arts when I was, I think, 7 or 8. So that's kind of before I started getting beat up on as a kid. And that all spawned from just Bruce Lee. I seen the movie Enter the Dragon, and, you know, they had it at a recreation center for free that we all could watch it. And just when I seen him, I just fell in love with him, and I completely got it. I got what he was doing, and it just like he was talking to me. I just wanted to be Bruce Lee.
Right.
Right after that, they started offering free martial arts lesson there. So I was in to win. It was no stopping me. So I guess in hindsight, being that it kept me training every night, it kept me away from problems and drugs and being on the street. The same thing. I started working out. I think I was about 11 or 12. When I started working out just with the neighborhood kids, and that kind of also kept me off the street, because if I wasn't training with martial arts, I was in somebody's garage. Back then, they used to have the cement, you know, 110-pound weight sets.
Right, right.
You know, only us older people would know that. So whoever had one, we were over at their house every night, you know. And if you could bench that 110 pounds, man, you were the king. Obviously, I never got there. So those two things kept me out of problem. And I guess, again, like I said, in hindsight, what I learned throughout the course of you know, discipline, of the different disciplines that I learned to fight and fighting systems, and just the internal power and strength and discipline it takes to the going to gym and go through hardship and working out, it was therapeutic for me. But I think I was probably too immature to be aware my learnings at that time.
Right.
And as I stated earlier, it took me into my early 20s before I started actually utilizing the intelligence that both fighting systems and bodybuilding have brought to me.
Right, right. You know, you've been open about your story and the challenges you've gone through. And, you know, through your book, Flexibility, A Story of Strength and Survival, it's probably brought a lot of people who identify with you, they come up to you. What's the someone who's had a similar upbringing? I mean, what was your key to break through? Because it's not only that you had this bodybuilding career. You know, you're a role model. You're a businessman. You have a great family, and I know that you've had your challenges along the way, but you made it through. Where, you know, some of the people who have had your challenges, they get stuck, right? What advice can you give to actually make it through? Don't just go to bodybuilding and training and get stuck there, but actually make it through like you did.
Well, first, it wasn't me. It was never me. You know, as I talk through any of my stories, I'll always bring to light someone who was greater than me, who put me on their back and then helped me and pulled me out of the sludge that I was in. So it was never me. And I think the most important thing that I could tell other people is you can't do it on your own. You know, first and foremost, you got to put God first, but there have to be greater people, greater surroundings than what you are to be able to help pull you out. Because if you're hanging around the same type of people that you are, you know, misery loves company. But, you know, if you're, you can't be a buzzard and want to be an eagle and you hang around just buzzards, you got to change your colors. You got to change your surroundings and look higher. So I stole this great quote from Sir Isaac Newton, and it's an epiphany of what helped me become who I was then and still continue to, because there's great people in my life now that I look up to that I'll mention later on that are the same thing. So the saying is from Sir Isaac Newton, and it goes something like, you know, if I've seen farther than others, it's because I've stood on the shoulders of giants.
Yeah.
So therefore, it's my way of letting everyone know I stood on the shoulders of giants. I'm just a little, you know, derelict. But because of greater people who bent over to help pick me up and hold me higher and hold me accountable to higher standards, is the only reason why I made it, you know. And now in business, I've learned so much from my business partner, Stan Efferding, you know, who's a multimillionaire and successful businessman in a multitude of different ways. Uh-huh. We just became great friends and we're like, you know, brothers are inseparable now. And he's taught me so much more about the different games and the different intelligence that you have to understand in business, you know, and how to make money. You know, and as you mentioned earlier, reinventing myself, well, yeah, you have to empower yourself with the new generation of global giants, you know, Mike Murshid and C.T. Flexer. They're the new giants.
Right.
The new world is the internet world. And these two gentlemen have been so successful in achieving what they have achieved just through viral internet sources. It's amazing. So that's why I teamed up with those two. To help me learn and utilize those new tools. You know, I'm one not to be shy or embarrassed about asking someone for help. You know, I take a saying from Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was in office here. You know, he wasn't the greatest at everything he done, but what he did is he put the greatest people around him to help him get, to achieve those things that he's did. So that's why I'm very choosy with who I partner up with and things that I do, because I want to be successful. And if someone has been successful in arena, don't be afraid to go up and ask them, hey, man, how did you do that?
Yeah.
You know, so, and, you know, I mean, you know, with CT and my Mike Rashida, it's shocking to them when I'm asking them questions because they're looking at me like, yeah, man, you're flex. But I'm I'm your equal. Because what I did on my platform, you are now doing on your platform. And this is a new world now. And I need to learn how to do it in this new world, because if I don't, I'm non-existing. I'm old school.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you have to reinvent yourself.
Yeah, that's some true wisdom there. I don't know about you. I don't know how active you are on message boards. But there's this whole resistance from the more established bodybuilders, like, it shouldn't be this way. Look, you got to adapt or die.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I get that so much, you know, and it's funny because I was at the FIBO and just here in the United States, I'll have someone walk up to me and they'll be enraged, pissed off, like, you know, I can't believe these guys, you know, they don't know who you guys are. And it's just these internet guys are so powerful. And he goes, just because they get a certain amount of hits, man, he goes, you know, you guys should be the ones. And I'm like, well, I get what you're saying, but time don't stand still, son.
Right.
Don't stand still. You know, before our only outlet was magazines and they were 3 months behind.
Right,
now, no one functions on a magazine level anymore. You know, even a broadcast of our local news, they all have their websites. It's immediate.
Right.
So with a click of a button, you can be in contact with millions of people. The magazine was never that powerful. So these people are who they are. And if you don't slow down and recognize the new way of doing business, you're going to be left behind.
Right. So your book, Flexibility, A Story of Strength, that's on Amazon.com. And that was published back in 2004. I'm curious. Telling your story, you've evolved, you're mature, you have better insight, more perspective. What's something that you've learned about yourself since that book, since that time?
Well, 2003 was the first time that it was released, and actually I remember getting the first issue of it and reading it, because I was actually at a dialysis center when they delivered it to me. It's interesting because anyone who knows me personally, they always, you know, beat me up and say, man, you need to write another book, because, you know, what would happen in that short period of my life, you know, tenfold has transpired since then. But I just, you know, I continuously try to evolve, you know, and we all have our problems that we go through. And I don't really, you know, feel that my problems are greater than anyone else, but my problem is my problem. Therefore, it is the greatest thing that I'm dealing with. But, you know, I mean, you know, since 2003, when I had my kidney transplant and the book was released, I had that year, 2004, I had 9 surgeries in 11 weeks that I almost lost my life to, dealing with my my kidney transplant. And the ongoing problems of my kidney disease that I haven't really been too vocal about, you know, publicly, because it's still pretty close to me. And actually only 2006 did I actually discover and find out that the kidney disease never goes away. I was under the impression, like a heart, you know, transplant, you know, you get a new heart, the problem's gone. Well, the problem isn't my kidneys. The victim is my kidneys. You know, so they still haven't discovered how the disease, you know, survives and what makes it tick. And it's still the most aggressive and deadliest kidney disease known to man with no cure. So, unlike what a lot of people think, oh, you know, Flex, you know, you're just making up excuses, you know, because of your utilization of sports technology drugs, you ruin your kidneys like everybody else did. Well, I mean, if I could make one wish come true, that would be the wish for that to be true. Because if so, then I wouldn't have to worry about my children, Brandy, Kenan, and Darius, and Nia, and Pearls. But unfortunately, I have to worry about them, and I have to make them aware of this this kidney disease, and they have to make their children and their children's children's children aware of this disease. So, I mean, if the buck could stop with me, that would be a beautiful thing. Hey, man, I pissed in my bed, and I lay in your piss. Don't make no excuses, right?
Uh-huh.
You know, but unfortunately, that isn't the case. But so that's probably the one thing that's most damaging is when people say that to me. Uh-huh. You know, it's almost like calling me the worst name in the world, because it almost, you know, just puts me in such an enraged state that I want to reach out and touch them. Not in a nice way at all, but right. Because it's deep, you know, when they say that, the first thing I think about is, really, if that was the case, then, you know, I wouldn't have to worry about my kid dying, you know, or my grandkid dying to this disease. So, but again, you know, my story may be different, but there's stories all over the world. And since I released the book in 2003, I went on a number of different venues and made it public what I went through. And I've even said, you know, if you're dealing with any of the problems that I stated in my book, be it being molested or beaten up or homeless or, you know, different addictions of certain sorts, or even being suicidal, to reach out to me and I'll try to help you. And when I did that, I was not aware of the onslaught of people who have their problems, and how difficult life is for so many out there. So, you know, the more I think that I'm different, the more I find out that there's so many other people just like me and with horrible stories also that, you know, we're more alike than we're not.
Yeah. I tell you, sometimes life goes by very quickly, right? It seems like you're in your heyday in the 90s. And now, like you said, you're approaching 50 years old. You talk about life and, you know, what you need to worry about. I'm curious, at this stage of your life, how does that make you look at life? How how much intensity and passion do you hug your children? I mean, tell me about the mindset that you're in right now.
You know, it's very enlightening. You know, it teaches you that, you know, every day isn't, you know, guaranteed to you. You know, it reminds me that, you know, regardless of what this image that I project, it's, you know, that could all be changed in a drop of a hat, whether it's, you know, I lose my millions again and I get sick again, or, you know, it's always, you know, in the back of my mind that, you know, at any moment I can get sick again and be back in a hospital and be facing another kidney disease. So, you know, every time, like now, I'm saying, okay, I want to get in shape. You know, by the age of 50 and reveal what I look like, because, you know, one of the other reasons is it's in the back of my mind. Well, eventually, you know, the pendulum is going to swing again and I'll get sick again. And, you know, depending on however the chips fall, you know, will be how rough it will to be able to bounce back, if bouncing back will be an option. So to have those pictures out there to be a reminder of not giving up is, you know, it's a very important, you know, statement that I want to make to people. But yeah, you know, I just enjoy my kids more. I enjoy what I do. You know, it's an awesome, beautiful thing, you know, to my 7-year-old daughter, Pearl. You know, I get the joy of sleeping with her every night and listening to her sing, you know, I Love You Daddy songs, you know, falling asleep and waking up in the morning and singing these crazy songs that she thinks before I get her ready for school. And, you know, if I have time and I pick her up from school, you know, she gets in the car and she's singing these I Love You Daddy songs and hugging me and kissing me. And it's like, you know, wow, you really think I'm that special? You know, so it's a different, it puts you in a different light. I know even for Stan, you know, after my business partner, he has two little ones now, and I've always told him, wait till you have your first one, man, you'll change. He goes, nope, I'm not going to change, And after he had his first daughter, I said, you're whooped now. And he goes, yeah. So now he just had his son just a few months ago, and I said, it changes you, doesn't it? He goes, yeah, it does. It really does. But, it's a beautiful thing, especially being removed from having to take the intense drugs that I did before that. I tried to explain to people, if you look at pictures of Skinny Kenny versus, Flex Wheeler, the competitor at his highest apex in his competitive career, you would think, wow, what a physical metamorphosis one could go through. But what I try to explain to them is the mental metamorphosis that you go through being that competitive and utilizing certain agents to help you get there is tenfold. And that's normally the secret killer to the sport is what you mentally go through and if you can handle it. And then even if you didn't utilize agents like I did, it's a known phenomenon. You look at all the great athletes all over the world. Uh-huh. One of the hardest things to do is to walk away from the sport that you dedicated over half your life to.
Right.
What do you do now? What's your identity? What's your identity to yourself? When you look at yourself in the mirror, being the same person, and I think that's probably why it's hard for great athletes to retire and not come back. You have some of the greatest athletes. I mean, I'm not even in their category as far as being greatness, but Muhammad Ali, Sugar Ray Leonard, Michael Jordan, all these great athletes
Willie
who
Mays.
Tried to come back, that tried to come back and do it again because you don't have any. I can't speak for them, but it's almost like it's hard to walk away when you dedicated over your half your life to doing something. What is your identity?
Right.
And because of that competitiveness that you have, you still think that you're good enough. But I've learned from them, and I'm smarter than that. I'd never try to come back to the sport, whether I was healthy or not, because I understand time don't stand still. It doesn't. It's not supposed to. You can't take a Mercedes-Benz 500 that they first made back in the 90s and compare it to a Mercedes-Benz 500 now. There's huge leaps and bounds of differences. One of the greatest honors for me was to watch a very close friend of mine, Dexter Jackson, break my record. And people were like, man, aren't you mad? Aren't you pissed? Records are meant to be broken. They are meant to be broken. If those records aren't broken, where have we evolved to?
Right.
And can you be so naive and cynical that you don't want your record to be broken? I'll always be the person who set that first record. I'll always be remembered for what I did. But you have to turn around and then give what was given to you, give it back and pay it forward. So it's an honor, and my kudos out to Dexter and all the new athletes who are blazing a trail in a bodybuilding world. And as I said, the new breed of celebrities that are just giving rebirth to the industry through the internet mediums.
Well, I'll tell you, it's that you are a leader. You set the trend for them to follow on the competitive stage. But what I'm getting from this podcast interview, Flex, is that that transition you talked about, that identity, it seems like you've moved, you've flowed freely and comfortably into this new identity. And I just feel that you're at peace. And I mean, the story singing with your 7-year-old daughter, brings joy to my heart. And that's another thing when these guys are done, right? Did you have a lot of role models in the bodybuilding world that made a successful transition like you did, like you're doing right now, past the competitive days? You talked about the challenge of that identity.
I don't know if I could call them or call him a role model, but I knew there was always one person that I looked up to that seemed like they had a better grip on life as a competitor, because he was a family man. He was married and still is married. And even after the sport, he's married. His children are in college. And I always remember thinking about him, that this guy got it right, because he just stood for a whole different breed of athletes. And I somewhat always try to keep in mind that's what true greatness is what he's doing. And that's Lee Haney.
Yes.
He just stood apart from everyone else. Tremendously competitive, but never badmouthed anybody. Uh-huh. You know, if you got on stage with him, he wanted to destroy you because you think you're better than him, but never had a bad thing to say. You know, it was always married, but never heard of him with any philanthropy or messing around or anything like that. You know, was married as he was a competitor, still married now, uh-huh. kids are in college, or if not, graduated from college. So he was probably one that I always looked up to, never achieved any of his goals from A to Z. But if anyone was a role model to me, that would be that one person and right. That I could think of right now.
Yeah, no, I know. Am I wrong? I mean, when someone gets out of bodybuilding, we usually don't hear about them. You may be more in touch with the thousands of former bodybuilders. Is the transition generally tough, in your opinion?
You know what? I think it would have been tougher if I hadn't been so sick and an incredible opponent was put in front of me, and I was my life to fight for my life.
Right.
And,
okay.
You know, as I said earlier in a video interview with Mike Rashid, you know, the greatest and worst part about me is me, you know, being suicidal for over half my life, actually, from the age of 13 till my late 30s.
Wow.
It's definitely
wow.
over half my life, but dealing with that and being suicidal. Right. And then, you know, finding out right around the age of 39, 38, that I was facing a disease that wanted and was able and willing to take my life at any given second. And now fighting to be here is really an interesting life changer. You know, so I think if that wasn't put before me and I had to focus everything on that, I would have probably thought I could come back too, and I would have probably been envious and been more, you know, angry about having to exit the sport. But you know, something very important was put in front of me, so that it literally whooped my ass for years to the point where it just whooped everything out of me, where I just didn't care about, you know, crap anymore except just being here. So, you know, I think that occupied a great and still does a great part of my mind frame that nothing really else compares to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're quite an inspiration past your competitive days. And I really appreciate your time. I know you're short on time. I want to get you back with all the legends that are going to be at the seminar in Santa Clara at the end of June. And you mentioned Lee Haney, Sean Ray, Mike Christian, Chris Cormier, and I'll be out there to help out. Oh, and Rich Gaspari too. So all these guys.
Dragon Killer.
Yeah, yeah. You guys see these guys all the time, right? Still on the road? You stay in contact?
Yeah. Okay. Me and Rich, you see each other all over the world. We travel with our companies and all the rest of the guys throughout the world of the events that we show up at. So it's always great. And, you know, we all have each other's numbers and we're able to, you know, contact either one of us if one can lend a hand to the other. So it'd be great for us all get back together in the same arena and be able to spark nostalgia about what was and what wasn't. And looking forward to that, definitely.
Yeah, and we'll get some more little interviews and clips, get you on video, make the most out of that weekend. I really appreciate your time, Flex. So make sure you come out to see Flex and all the legends in Santa Clara at the end of June. For Flex Wheeler, I am Skip LaCour. Train hard and think big.
You're listening to Skip LaCour's Bodybuilding and Fitness Podcast.
This is Sean Ray, Hall of Fame professional bodybuilder. I put not only my body through some vicious conditioning, but my skin has also taken a beating as well. For years, I've subjected my skin to the tanning beds and tanning products. I've spent a lifetime of training to look good and feel good. But just because I no longer compete doesn't mean I've stopped taking care of myself. I'm constantly trying to fight the hands of time and have clean, young, and healthy-looking skin in the process. That's why I've joined Miriam International, my number one choice of skincare in my quest for looking forever young. There's never been a skincare product made specifically for dealing with the tone and texture issues that I've had in moisturizing and rehydrating my skin all at the same time. This product is truly making a difference in the fight against natural aging process. Don't take my word for it, just look at my skin. For more information on this number one anti-aging skincare product, visit my website at SeanRayskincare.com.